Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, a podcast about the Chicago White Sox, run by the Baseball Prospectus local blog, PP South.
I feel like the emphasis on the question should be more after the about. Like, it is a podcast, there's no denying that, but what it's about is where the question mark should be.
I mean, a lot of podcasts have, you know, like these production values and some sort of regular schedule. And you know, this is really something.
We meet the bare minimum for what a podcast is. So we are a podcast.
But you're convinced we meet it.
Yeah, the emphasis would be a podcast about the Chicago White Sox.
This podcast is available on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. You should subscribe to each so you don't have to go through the daily torment of trying to figure out whether we've recorded a podcast on a weekly basis or not. Just by searching The Catbird Speaks on either one of those formats. Joining you tonight, I am your host, James Fegan, the editor of BP Southside. My guest is Dr. 100.
Yes, you did it. I'm so happy.
Why would I not do it? It's very late at night. Rules don't apply.
Well, it's only 9:30 here.
Mark, why are you identifying yourself as Dr. 100?
Oh, I actually don't really know. It just kind of came up at work today, and I wanted to see if I could get the text to start calling me it, and the answer was yes, because if you're the doctor, they will do whatever.
Well, I'm glad that you don't have too much power to abuse. I mean, once you're, like, on the city council when you're 40, things can really get hairy.
Yeah.
White Sox just played, let's see, they have, like, 5 games left now?
Yep.
They just beat the Rays and really, you know,
kind of. If they win out, they can hit 500.
That's true. They just had Chris Sale throw a really kind of weird, but, you know, still adequate and good Chris Sale game.
Yeah, get him up to 17 wins.
There's some chatter about this being his last start of the season, which.
And potentially then last Sox start.
Right. You know, I don't know who, like. They're so bereft of starting pitching depth. I don't know what they would do on the last game of the season.
I see no reason not to start him. Like, are you really scared that that's going to be the game that finally snaps the arm?
I wouldn't think it was that. I just, like, I don't know. It's no shutting him down, like some sort of reward or I don't know.
I mean, it just seems weird. It's not like he's. It's not like one more start would hurt his Cy Young case.
I guess unless it might just be like the Cy Young case is kind of dead, so.
Yeah, exactly. So at this point, it's just kind of like, all right, either start him because that's his spot in the rotation, or you're not for nebulous reasons.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of dismissed any idea that anything physically is wrong with him. Yeah. During postgame, he said he felt as great as he's ever felt. Nothing says Fan Appreciation Day like a bullpen game. So maybe
nothing says Fan Appreciation Day like Jacob Turner.
Matt Albers. He's a set start already this year.
Nothing says Fan Appreciation Day like signing Dewan Day to a one-day contract.
That actually probably would be a bit more fun.
Bring on Ramon Troncoso.
I realize that when people talk about like me having like finishing sentences weekly on air, it's this constant uncertain tone I put to my voice, but I realize it's because that's how I feel about everything regarding the team.
Basically, what I want out of Fan Appreciation Day is sign all of the worst players since the last time we made the playoffs. So you've got Andy Diaz out there. Your pitching staff is Will Omen, Scott Linebrink. You got Wilson Bedemit, like all that good shit.
I think they should reunite the Misfit Grand Slam.
Jeff Kepinger needs to be there.
Was he part of it? Well, I remember Jordan, like, it was hit by Orlando Hudson. I think Hector Jimenez was on base. I think the other two were Ray Almeida and Jordan Danks.
Christ,
I think,
like,
I think all those guys are available.
Grand Slam ever hit.
Were you there for that?
No. No, I was there for Kepinger's first home run as a White Sox. That's my one.
I was there with Matt Adams. The Southside Sox crew was there. My sister was there. I lifted.
What year was it?
That was 2012? The end of 2012 because Sale started that game and got shelled.
Yeah, he was
totally gassed.
Yeah, that was the night that I gave the stranger a lap dance on the red line.
I lifted my sister in the air in a hug afterwards, and like we both like fully committed to the sarcastic celebration of this grand slam, but it was like a movie. Yeah, they should do that. Sale kind of helped.
Pause. Oh. What is the coolest White Sox moment you were actually present for?
Wow. I don't know. Do you have, like, let me think for a second. Do you have something queued up?
Yeah, I was there for the back-to-back-to-back-to-back home run game.
I saw a 4 home run inning.
Because the best part about the back-to-back-to-back-to-back was Toby Hall coming up next, and on his first swing, selling out harder for a home run than I think I've seen any hitter ever try, and whiffing and basically falling down, and the entire stadium just clapping. So it was like, we appreciate it. Like, you're trying. You're not good at baseball, but you're trying.
I saw a Warren Newson walk off in 93. That was pretty cool.
You were 6.
But I remember the hell out of it.
How do you remember that?
How do you not remember things when you're 6? When do your memories start? When you're like 25?
No, legitimately, my memory does not start till I'm 9.
That's F and the B, man.
It's terrifying, right? Like, I have like spots that I remember, but I do not have.
How many concussions have you had?
1. And my memory problems started before that. Like, I can remember random crap, but not like anything from before I went to public school in 4th grade.
You remember, like, your kindergarten teacher? Or, like, what they would look like?
I remember some names, but there'd be times legitimately where I'd be at, like, parties and someone that went to Catholic school with me would show up and be like, hey. And they'd start talking to me as if I knew them. And I was like, I don't know who you are.
So if someone, like, if you were, like, out in your front yard and, like, someone from before you were 9 came up and was like, hey, Mark, buddy, and, like, ran up to you, you would just, like, pump them full of lead or something?
I don't own a gun.
But other than that.
But other than that, I don't know. See, this is why I was saying the part where we're nominally about baseball.
I mean, I have some cool games.
We are 8 minutes in, and we have already derailed completely.
Well, I knew you were going to do that.
That's what I bring to the table.
Especially when I had you one-on-one. I don't think I've ever actually said your name. Like, I've said Mark, but, like, people could be on the idea.
No, you didn't even... Yeah, you said Dr. 100.
That your last name is 100.
There's not a real introduction.
Mark Crimiano, frequent contributor to the site and the Slack. It's our
all
guest today. I mean, the way... Like, it's kind of weird that we've upped our podcast production while, like, less things to talk about have been... There have been less things to talk about. Because the White Sox have been toast for like 2 months.
It's not our fault the team didn't do anything.
You guys really have a defeatist attitude about as far as like, oh, there's nothing to talk about. There's nothing to write about. Like, I post something like, and I just get comments from you guys on Twitter like, I can't believe James found something right today. I'm like, I don't know. I had to think of something. What was I supposed to do?
Cry?
Just like shutter the blog?
Well, I mean, you do live in Indiana.
That was, like, I was writing shit late season before that became the case.
Whatever helps you sleep at night, James.
Well, what's your favorite memory is just the random 4 home run game?
Yeah, the coolest thing that I was at in person for a White Sox game is definitely that. That's a major league record.
It is?
Yeah. Back-to-back-to-back-to-back home runs, it tied a major league record. Four at-bats in a row of home runs is insanely impressive.
Man, I guess.
I mean, it's more of a random luck thing than anything, but it's still awesome.
I can't think of anything. I saw, like, Quintana, like deal, like, 8 scoreless in 2012 and remember thinking, like, this might be a dude.
Second would probably be Pierzynski's walk-off against the Dodgers in 05.
That was the first day I came back from working in a distant, remote summer camp in Michigan. Or that was the first day before I left. Yeah.
That was a fun game.
It was an awful game until that happened.
Oh, I know. It was just another Freddy Garcia start of just like, here I am, giving up four runs and kind of existing.
Are you a Freddy Garcia truther of some kind?
No, it was just, I felt like every time I went to a Sox game from 04 till probably, I don't know, he was gone, I had a 50-50 chance of it being Freddy Garcia starting.
I saw a lot of Gavin Floyd.
It was either him or Gavin Floyd. Anytime it was Burley, I was just overjoyed. But otherwise, it was like, yep, you are going to watch Gavin Floyd or Freddy Garcia pitch. And it's like, God damn it.
My thing growing up was my sister was, you know, she's older, so she got first pick of who she could say her favorite player was.
Oh, yeah, I remember these stories.
And she picked Frank Thomas. And I got Robin Ventura. And she got Michael Jordan, and I got Scottie Pippen.
Well, there's nothing wrong with getting Scottie Pippen. He's the better choice. The man dunked a hoagie.
This is a stupid reason for him to be your favorite, Mark.
It's not the reason. It's a reason, not the reason.
But whenever we go to games, like, Thomas or Jordan would be kind of quiet. Thomas would outright, like, struggle, and Ventura would go ballistic. I definitely went to, like, a two-dinger, like, Robin Ventura game where the White Sox scored, like, 12 runs, and Thomas went, like, over four.
See, I was just a very dumb child, and my favorite player was Ozzy.
Maybe you just enjoyed, like, plus range.
I guess. Maybe as a child, I was, like, super into defensive placement and the number 13 and bad mustaches.
I remember,
all
like,
that makes sense.
Slowly becoming aware, like, not even, like, Moneyball, but, like, before, like, just reading all the stats on my, like, the back of my baseball cards and, like, mm-hmm. slowly coming to the horrifying realization that Ozzie Guillen was a horse shit hitter.
Oh, my God. He was terrible. It's one of those, I have these bad memories of, as a little child, going up to the edge of the fence in left field and just, like, screaming for him to hit home runs when he'd be up to bat. Because I was the dumbest child on the planet.
But, like, you listen to Hawk, you constantly, like, hear him praise whatever Ozzy's doing at the plate. And you think that, like, Ozzy's doing his job to a satisfactory level.
Well, I mean, really, what Sinet did it for me was whatever year they had that promo on WCIU, Bevington was still the manager. Because he was Terry the Brain Bevington. And they tried to assign, like, all of the manager and all the infielders superhero names. And Ozzy was like Vacuum Man because that was his range. I was like, yeah, this is cool.
So he's a character from Mystery Man, basically.
Oh, it was terrible. They had these terrible little animations for it. It was great. It really worked.
So Sale gave some statements tonight, basically saying he wants to stay with the White Sox forever because I guess there's this specter that, you know, he could be gone. I probably wouldn't have thought of it if the Beats hadn't brought it up. I mean, it's definitely a possibility. It doesn't feel like imminent the way Burley's departure at the end of 2011 did.
Yeah, Burley's, it kind of felt like more of a foregone conclusion than anything.
I mean, like, you know, fans were even, like, putting up, like, you know.
Well, yeah, there was the beautiful 56. They had, like, whited out in the seats and the empty-ass stadium.
Yeah, did a fan do that, or, like, the team?
That was a fan.
What was that?
That was, like,
a
very... I think, like, trash bags? I have the picture saved on either this or my desktop, my laptop or my desktop. But, yeah, it was one of those moments where it's like, oh, this is really cute.
It's freaking trash bags.
Yeah, just, you know.
I would say it wasn't even like as much anxiety about the imminent departure as like the Burley trade buzz in 2007 before he signed his extension.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know with the end of the Burley run, it was more just kind of like the grim acceptance that, hey, it's like knowing one of your friends is moving away and you're never actually going to see them again. So you're just kind of like, yeah, well, we'll still keep in touch, but like you know both of you are just lying. That's what it felt like with Burley. I mean, eventually, of course, he's going to come back to the Sox in some aspect. They're the White Sox. That's how they work.
These looks like sheets of paper of some kind in this photo.
I don't know, man. It was years ago.
What is with your memory?
I spent a lot of time becoming a doctor, and a lot of stuff got phased out.
Do you have, like, your fiancé's name, like, written on the back of your hand?
In the eyelids, actually.
How do you see them?
With my eyes.
But your eyelid, when you blink your eyes, it's just darkness. You can't read stuff.
Maybe your eyes are like that.
Because I have functioning human eyes?
No.
So it's definitely possible. I don't foresee it. I'm probably going to write something reflective about it because I don't have any ideas for tomorrow. But I don't see it being like this big, mournful, sad thing. It's a possibility, but you know, yeah, I'm not even as anxious about it as I, or you know, I shouldn't say anxious because I'm trying to, we're outside the fan view at this point, but I don't think it's the specter hanging over the team even the way that it was at the deadline.
I mean, yeah, there's the possibility they trade him, but really it's the same with, oh, well, trade him or Quintana. There's not really a point in just trading one of them. Because we're looking best case scenario, they finish this year with, what, 78, 79 wins?
81.
Well, yeah, that's absolute best. Fine. Most realistic scenario.
They're not playing good teams.
Yeah, I know, but most realistic scenario does not have them running the table the rest of the way out.
The Twins just lost their 101st game of the year.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And the Rays are not they're not putting the pedal to the metal from these first two games of the series.
So, whatever. Fine. Best case scenario, they are exactly a 500 team.
Yes.
They are stuck in that horrid bullshit quagmire that the White Sox have been stuck in almost all of our lives of what do we do next?
They won a World Series, like, not very long ago.
Well, I know, but let's talk about the fact that how many other times have they even made the playoffs in our lifetime?
Four times.
Four times, right?
So you asked me how many other times, so I said three.
Because... Well, I know, yeah. Whatever.
Yes,
yeah,
four times.
Like, you'll be 30 next year. You're very old, and they will have made it four times. That's terrible. We're talking about a franchise that's never, ever made the playoffs in back-to-back seasons.
Are you talking about my life or the White Sox?
Both.
As terrible?
But anyways, now that you've completely derailed my train of thought. But yeah, they're stuck in that forever...
I'm sorry, did you just criticize me for distracting you from, the, like, discussing baseball?
Yeah, I did. Live with it.
Okay.
Soak up that irony. Drink it in, man. But they're stuck in that horrible hell of 75 to 85 wins where you're not bad enough to have a direction and you're not good enough to have a direction. And you have management and an owner that have seemed adamant about not picking a direction. And so with the people that are like, oh, well, trade Sale or Quintana, what's the point? What are you going to get from trading one of them that sets you on a direction? Like, you either have to keep them both and finally commit to trying to get somewhere, or you have to trade them both and admit, hell, it's rebuild time. Like, burn it down.
If you're trading one to still compete, I guess, are you just trading for another, like, worse pitcher? Because I don't think you have the rotation depth to really
replace. Exactly. If you give up one of them, the rotation is just fucked. Because the top of the rotation is great. You have Sale, Quintana. Rodon, he's going to be a three. He's not going to be an ace. It's becoming more apparent as it goes on.
Like, could be a two.
He could be a two, but he's never going to be an ace.
No.
And that, I mean, it's fine. Like, you need twos and threes. Like, look at the rotations when you had prime Danks and prime Floyd. It was great. Like, neither were ever going to be an ace, but you need other guys. Especially if you have Sale and Quintana, having a solid three is a pretty good thing to have. You have a 1A and a legitimate 1B, and then a 3, like, that's pretty fantastic.
I think you're Katana's hoping, mostly a hard 2, but, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, 1 beat, a hard 2, like, either way, if you have a legitimate 1, 2, 3, like, an honest 1, 2, 3, not just a, oh, these are our 1, 2, and 3, that's great shape to be in.
Yes.
But if you trade one of those two, you now have, so say they trade Q. You have Sale, Rodon, and your third starter is Miguel Gonzalez.
Love Miguel.
I do too, as like a 4 or a 5.
Yes.
But if he's your 3, holy shit.
I don't know if it's holy shit levels as much as like...
Well, because who's your 4 and 5 then?
You're bringing back Shields, which could be really bad since he was literally the worst starter in baseball this year.
Yeah.
Almost entirely based on how bad he was with the Sox.
He's James Baldwin if James Baldwin listened to Seven Dust.
Do we know for a fact that James Baldwin didn't listen to Seven Dust?
I assume James Baldwin listens to, like, redneck country.
Well, what do you think he was playing when he was, you know, torturing Mark Burley?
Redneck country. He's like, I'm going to ruin this music that you love, Burley.
I was about to say, what did he do to Burley that was so bad that Burley couldn't enjoy that?
I don't want to know. But yeah, like, there's nothing on the free agent market this year. It's the most garbage free agent market I can remember.
Well, there's Wilson Ramos.
Wilson one-legged Ramos, yes. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a terrible free agent market. So
Brett Anderson's only 29.
Huh?
Brett Anderson's only 29.
Yeah, and has the arm of, I don't know, my deceased 100 and hold my... My deceased 126-year-old great-grandmother?
Charlie Morton's hurt, isn't he?
Everyone is hurt or terrible.
Derek Holland's really bad. Rich Hill's a free agent. You can go for that.
Oh, God, just you stop. You're making me sad. But, yeah, like, they're stuck in this horrible nexus of there's not really anything to add to improve.
I don't know why you don't think that Herm just doesn't have the best old-timey blister remedy.
I mean, he might, but there's nothing to add to this team from free agency. And if you trade, so...
I wouldn't say there's nothing, and I certainly think they should be more aggressive than they were this year.
Well, they should be more aggressive, but the problem is this next year's crop is a lot less enticing. Last year was the year to be like, yep, we got a bumper crop. Farmer's Almanac's just showing a drought. This winter's going to be terrible. Your crops will die. Everyone will be sad.
I cannot say I understand their decision as far as last year's free agent market.
When have we understood their decisions? They're not good.
How expensive do you think Franklin Gutierrez would be?
I feel like it'll be kind of like Austin Jackson, where that will be the premier move they make.
That would be better than Austin Jackson. I think the only problem is that I don't know if Franklin can still play center, which is what
exactly.
He really
needs. So is it better?
He can hit.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what's the point?
What's the point of hitting? Score runs?
No, what's the point in if he's your premier move? What's the point there?
Not having outfield be a black hole. Oh, if he's the premier move, then nothing.
Exactly, yeah. If he is the keynote plan of the offseason, like, what are you doing?
Putting a moderate amount of butts in the seats, I guess.
Yeah, you think he's going to bring in the moderate amount of butts? Like,
yeah, he hasn't played center all year, so screw it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's really just not anything out there to add hitter wise. Like if Cespedes
Fowler opts out,
don't make me drive to Elkhart.
Why? What's wrong with Fowler?
He's not going to come to the White Sox at this point.
I mean, maybe they actually like gave him market value. He'd come. I mean, they're not going to do that. But I'm just
exactly
if we're just. But we can't just like analyze a team with fatalism because then why? What are we even doing?
the same thing we've always done. We're just honest about it.
I mean, yes, if they approach with the same conservatism, then there really is no point. And if they don't rebuild or pick a direction with aggression, then there really is no point. But then there is no point to anything until just, like, waiting out until, like, the modus operandi for the team just, like, undergoes some drastic change. And do we just forever assume that's never going to happen?
Kinda.
Kind of stop following the team? Is that what you're advocating?
I don't know that I'm straight up advocating that, but it kind of feels like it.
I mean, they could just, you know, continue with a pace of, like, you know, rolling sixes every 80 to 90 years or so.
Basically, I mean, how much of my life am I going to kick to teams like this in the Illini?
A lot. I mean, you're contributing to websites that cover both, so you seem pretty enthused about it.
I know, it's because I hate myself.
Michael Saunders is a free agent, but I think we discussed this last podcast that, you know, post stepping on a sprinkler and wrecking his knee, he probably can't play center either.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
Austin Jackson's a free agent.
Aren't we all?
He also just wrecked his knee.
James, what's wrong with you? Why do you do this to yourself?
It's rewarding.
Is it?
Yes. I've met so many great friends doing this.
I'll give you that.
How come Craig Gentry is not listed as a center fielder? He's fast. That's all he's good at.
I refuse to get into philosophical conversations about Craig Gentry. At any point of day.
This is more tangible than philosophical.
Is it?
Why? Because any, like, use of Fred Gentry, who has played all 14 games this season, and hit 147, 237, 176, is not a grounded in reality discussion?
I'm going to let you just, you know. Yeah, I'm going to. You're defining exactly where I'm going with it, so yeah.
What happened to Craig Gentry? Mark, what do you think of the whole Tyler Saladino-Brett Laurie situation? Saladino has basically played to the level of Brett Laurie in his absence. How do you think the Sox should handle that situation going forward?
I can tell you how I hope they don't handle it.
Well, why don't you tell me how you can handle it? We'd like to do affirmative.
All right. Well, the way they should handle it is keep both of them. Because neither one's an all-star. Neither one will ever be an all-star at this point in their careers.
You say this in a world where Hector Santiago has an all-star appearance.
Well, yeah, but put it this way. Do you see them being the Ken Harvey of the team they're on? The Brad Penny?
Especially on the season that Brett Laurie had this year, I could see him just being nuclear hot with BABIP and swinging at everything and hitting for power for like a solid month and a half, maybe even 2 month stretch that gets him like an early spike in voting before his regression hits. Okay. And rolling into the All-Star break having been voted onto the team, despite having like a 730 OPS by that point.
But back to like where I was going with it. The two of them are useful parts to a team. They're not key components, but you do need guys that are like 1.5 to 3 win above replacement guys. And that's their appropriate ranges. Like, these aren't guys that are really ever going to hurt you to have on the team because they're never going to make enough money that they're really overpaid.
I see it as you got two guys who can both play multiple positions since Laurie has played third. And neither of them are really trustworthy on their own. Saladino's not really have the pedigree or a lot of like the stability in his peripherals to like be certain that he's going to be like a starting quality player. And Lurie is not someone you necessarily trust to be healthy or, totally out of whack with his swing like he was at this point.
Feel like Tyler Saladino's best case scenario is useful utility man.
I would say his best case scenario is like really like super utility guy. Like he's been this year. Like this year is his best case scenario.
His best case scenario is like slightly less useful Willie Bloomquist.
Whoa. He's better than that.
No, he's not. What talent does he have that's that much better than Willie Bloomquist?
Not being 40, which I think Willie Bloomquist was for like 10 years.
I don't think that's how age works.
Look it up.
I have. I'm a scientist.
No, you're a doctor.
That's the same thing. You know nothing of science.
You know nothing of humans.
Willie Bloomquist could play any position. And was fast as hell.
Catcher?
He never did, but come on, if you play all three outfield positions, short and third, you can play catcher.
Did he?
He did not. I just said he didn't. You're a bad listener. But he also stole 133 bases in his career. Tyler Saladino has stolen 19.
That wasn't really a definitive factoid. What are you trying to like demonstrate with that?
That one of the two had a plus skill, and it was speed, and his name was Willie.
Saladino is like, how many games does he have in his career? Like, even a full season?
Look, yes, he has 161 games.
So no, because he's one short.
Did he play tonight?
I think so.
Then, he has 162.
I think he's been hurt.
Well, either way, eat it. Anyways, yeah, neither one would ideally be a starter if you had dreams of contending. But
I think they're fine.
I mean, if they're like 8 or 9 guy, but the problem with the Sox is they're not.
I mean, they're essentially league average bats. I think it could be a 6 or 7 guy. You're fine.
Exactly.
Especially
but you can't
the White
have,
Sox team is inevitably going to be pitching dependent.
Yeah. But the thing is, I don't see the point in trading one away for whatever you can get because you're not really going to get anything. Like, look at what the White Sox gave up to get Lurie this offseason. Zach Irwin and J.B. Wendelken.
Irwin could be a guy who plays baseball for a living.
That's basically the nicest way to describe either of these two.
I'm less sure about Wendelken.
They are human beings who can play baseball. And it's like, yes, that's accurate. I mean, nice thing you say about Wendelken is, hey, he pitched 12.2 innings this year for the A's. He has health insurance for the rest of his life.
The nice thing I can say about Wendelken is it means that 3 of the 4 guys from the Jake Peavy trade have made the majors.
There you go. But I don't understand the idea behind trading either of them. It's just dumb.
Zach Irwin had a rough season in the A's organization, I will tell you what.
Yeah.
12.3 hits per 9 is too many.
Just a bit.
He could be relieving soon.
The whole idea that the White Sox should trade or DFA one of them, what's the point? Like, Saladino's not going to make any money next year. He is not arbitration eligible until after the 2018 season, so he's basically free.
Well, yes, but Lurie's the one that you're worried you would...
Well, yeah, but Lurie's going to make, what, $6 million next year? He made $4 this year. So he will make...
He's not going to make a ton since he missed... He hasn't played since...
I was just giving him a moderate raise. So even if he'll make somewhere from $4 to $6 million. So he'll still be underpaid for what he's worth. Why? Like, what is that? Do you actually expect the White Sox to spend that $6 million productively? No, they won't.
They could. I just think if at that point, if they're like that degree of strapped, then they're not going to be able to get something substantive or as transformational as they need. They need like another really big bat in this order.
Yeah, if cutting Brett Lurie to get the slightly extra bump in money to sign a useful hitter is what's making the difference, sell the team. You can't compete. If you can't afford the $5 million middle infielder that exists, if that's what's stopping you from getting like the star outfielder, just walk away.
So, in the realm of realistic suggestions that you have shot down as far as the free agent market, Dexter Fowler, that's off limits for you as far as discussion, but compelling for a sale of the team.
Do you think the Sox have enough to tempt him away? Do you think they would put up a big enough offer that he would leave the good job he has?
How long do you think the Cubs plan on keeping him? Because it's not no options.
I don't know, I'm not saying it is, but he seems to really love playing there.
Yeah, but maybe they don't want him anymore. Maybe he wants multi-year deals and it's not going to like accept a one-year deal because the market is like flush again, because it's not going to be. He could cash out majorly. And maybe they're like, we can spend money elsewhere and just, you know, have Albert Amora play plus defense and center and bat eighth and still score a ton of runs because we have, you know, all the guys that we have.
And I'm very burned by the team, and I just don't really have faith in the Sox spending money to get anything.
I mean, I wrote today about them probably keeping Avisail Garcia because he had a good August. So, by good August, I mean 50 PAs.
Yeah.
So I get it. I just don't. I don't want to give into the cycle of just being stagnant and thinking, well, nothing's gonna happen. So whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those where I feel more inclined to believe something if there's signs towards it.
I mean, their signs have been very weird. The whole, like, not speaking to direction and kind of saying, you'll know what we're doing when we start doing it. I mean, it's very them, but also just, I guess that's how you really signal a rebuild. I guess you'd want most teams, when they're talking about rebuilding and reformatting, are a bit more transparent about it.
Yeah, you rip the Band-Aid off right away.
Because you kind of want everyone to be on board. Like, you don't want to give this like air of uncertainty and then gut the team and have everyone go into panic because you're not like being upfront with people.
Yeah, because a rebuild is, while essential in sports at times, it's kind of the shittiest thing you can do to your fan base. And I mean, it has to happen at points, because if you just don't have anything coming, you can't just keep stringing it along and hope for some magic. But as a fan, it is the shittiest thing your team can do to you, because it's like, hey, here's this thing that I'm committing money and time to, and there's going, oh yeah, we're going to suck for like 2 or 3 years.
It's like chemotherapy, almost.
It's a necessary evil.
And if you didn't tell someone that you're giving them chemotherapy, they would just think you were a sadist.
Exactly. That's a really good analogy for it. Because it's just like, rip that Band-Aid off right away. I'll have times where I have cases where there's not really going to be a happy ending. And we can try a lot of stuff. And I can either tell the owner that right away and be like, yeah, we can still go down this road. Or you can go, well, maybe this, no. If you're going with the path that sucks, you need to be open about it right away. That's the best thing you can do. If you try to gild the fucking lily to your fans about, no, you'll know, and then you start doing that shit, just open it, do it. Tear that Band-Aid off.
Which is why I don't really see the whole transformation or rebuild or selling off sale really coming. Because that's something you do a lot more deliberately. I mean, usually you bring in a whole new administration, GM, for the purpose with the stated agenda of like, hey, you got to transfer the team. Like,
I mean, honestly,
this weird, like, negotiated, well, we consider all our options, like, midstream kind of, like, gutting of the franchise.
Yeah, I'd actually be okay with the whole reset button.
I would. I don't think it's the best option for this roster, but at this point you need a plan.
Something has to happen.
I mean, as we said many times, you're not going to reboot and get a better young core.
No, you're not. And so it's one of those where it's, yeah. I just, it blows me away that a team that has Jose Abreu, Adam Eaton, Chris Sale, and Jose Quintana signed for so cheap.
And Rodon.
And Anderson just can't do anything. I mean, it's not a perfect situation. It's not like the Cubs where you have this army of amazing, cheap, young talent. So it's basically impossible to fuck up.
Yeah, but the Cubs have Lester and freaking Hayward on their payroll.
Exactly. They did the right things where you're supposed to go, okay, you have all this surplus value. You have this amazing talent for cheap. That lets you overpay. That lets you go, hey, premium free agent, we know your contract won't end well, but it doesn't really matter. And that seems to be the part that the White Sox just never understood.
Like, there was no, like, there was absolutely no bargain hunting of the way that they went about their free agent pursuits the last 2 years. It was just, let's get the best guy on the market.
Who was the last honest premier free agent the White Sox signed?
There's Bell.
That was my one I was going to say, yeah. Albert Bell.
But Bell even was kind of like, didn't he have like the asshole discount like already applied to him?
Well, he was still an asshole, but he was the best hitter in baseball.
He was, but it was like, I mean, it's hard. You look back at free agent contracts even from like the 90s and they look like, you know, what was happening here? This is a totally different market and universe has existed in. But I guess I'd have to double check as far as like whether that was like a premium market deal. It felt like it. But on a poisonous. Doubled.
The year before the Sox signed him, he made $5.7 million. They signed him and he made 10. And I feel like $10 million back in 1997 was a hell of a baseball contract.
Yeah.
So yeah, the last time they actually anteed up and bought a premier free agent, I was 9 years old.
Well, did we conclude that this was the last time they did? When was JB Navarro signed?
I was going to say, but like, no, like, be serious for a second. Who is a more marquee player that they signed than him? Like, this was a guy who had been an all-star 4 years in a row, and the 3 years before they got him, he finished third, second, and third in MVP for American League. Silver Slugger all 3 years, all-star all 3 years. He was legitimately a top five hitter in baseball, and they went out and got him.
And they didn't get burned. I mean, the first year was kind of meh, but then he was awesome the second year, next year.
Yeah,
then he opted out, and then he broke down. It was perfect.
Yeah, it worked out very well for them, and then they just never did it again. So like, you can be like, all right, who's the next best hitter that they actually went out and signed in free agency? Adam Dunn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty.
And Dunn was a great hitter before they got him, but he wasn't on the level of Albert Bell.
I mean, he was a legit piece, but he definitely wasn't top of the market.
Yeah, he was a legit piece, but it's not like, at that point in Albert Bell's career, it was, you're thinking, this is a potential Hall of Famer. His body doesn't fall apart. You've got a 300 hitter knocking out 40 plus home runs a year, 100 extra base hits. That is the definition of a premier free agent, and they just have never done anything like that since.
There's no one we're overlooking. There's no one that we're pleased overlooking.
I can't think of anybody. They've made trades and they've signed guys that were at one time premier free agents, but weren't by the time they got them.
Magaly Radonjic was a free agent, a premier free agent. They were just smart enough to grab him when he was 16.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I mean, this is depressing.
Starlin Marte was a premier IFA prospect, and then his Buscone came to the tryout with a gun.
Yeah. Oh.
The new marketing efficiency is international scouts who aren't afraid to die.
I guess.
Have you not read that story?
I have. I just really know how to respond.
I don't know.
But yeah, we're honestly not missing anyone. They have not signed a hitter on that level since 1997.
Or a pitcher.
Or a pitcher, yeah.
That's more forgivable, given that they have been
their ability,
the last 10 years.
God, that is depressing.
Get over it.
No.
Pretty funny how bad the Twins are, right?
Yeah. That's pretty good.
They're going to set a franchise record for losses.
I mean, what do you expect to happen, though?
Did we ever publish that preseason predictions that Colin, the over-unders that Colin was putting out?
I don't know.
Well, I was thinking it'd be cute to like go back through it and see what we got wrong. But you're not being cooperative.
I wasn't part of the writing staff yet.
That's true. Did you do any preseason picks?
I don't think I did.
I did. Let's do that as our finale. What do you say?
Okay. I'm in.
Are you?
Yeah, I mean, I would have honestly probably predicted Cleveland, Detroit. Detroit and the White Sox would have been interchangeable. Really, I think it would have been pretty much along what we've got. I wouldn't have thought the Twins would have been this horrid.
I was big on the Twins suck train.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they would finish fifth, but I didn't think they'd be like three-digit losses.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't have, you know, been bold enough to call that.
Yeah, like I definitely thought they were going to finish worst in the division. But I
thought 90-plus.
Yeah, I didn't think it would be like, wow, you have a legitimate chance at finishing with the number one draft pick.
I was not bold enough to say this is the worst Twins team of all time. I could not cop to that.
Yeah, like I would not have predicted this is the worst team in baseball.
All right, AL West. I had Rangers winning. I had Astros in second, but I had them winning the wild card. And I had Mariners third, Angels fourth, A's fifth.
That's totally reasonable.
In the Central, I still feared the Royal menace. I picked them to win the division.
Now that pixie dust had to wear off.
They got super hurt.
Yeah.
Lorenzo Cain finally became like as achy as he always walks around, looking like he is.
Motherfucker.
Indians second, White Sox third, Tigers fourth, Twins fifth.
Yeah, that all sounds reasonable. Like I had the Sox at like a playoff team if everything broke right, but most realistically, an 80-84 win team. And hey, look at that. We're just below it.
I had the Blue Jays winning the East with the Red Sox as the wild card. I had...
You flip-flopped too. That's fine.
I had the Orioles dead last, though, behind the Rays.
Well, that was just dumb.
And the Yankees... What? You had that much faith in the Orioles preseason with that pitching staff?
More faith than I do in the Rays.
The Rays are like Dakota studs.
Yeah, and we live in the real world.
Yeah, well, I was bold from an organizational standpoint to put him fourth, I feel. Anyway, so my American League MVP was Mike Trout.
Yeah.
My second was Manny Machado.
Hmm.
I don't know what possessed me to put Troy Tulowitzki as my third place pick.
Heroin.
That's mystifying to this day. Very popular in this region. Yeah. I picked Sale to win Cy. Kluber second. Right. Doesn't look stupid.
Yeah. No, none of that looks dumb.
Burned like, by Chris Archer.
Never looks dumb, but... Yeah. Like, your top two picks, and for the most part, all your divisional picks seemed reasonable.
Chris Archer was not good. So here's a really bad one. Rookie of the Year. Byung-Ho Park.
Wow. Wow.
It looked good for, like, April.
I feel like Rookie of the Year is the hardest preseason award to pick because, like, MVP, you can just go, yeah, Mike Trout exists right now. It's like picking Bonds. Even if you're wrong, he's going to finish second. Like, you don't look dumb.
Rookie I kind of wish I just showed my first place pick, though that still wouldn't save me from Byung-Ho Park. I don't think anyone I pick is going to finish in the top three. My second is Buxton.
Yeah, Rookie of the Year is impossible.
And third is Blake Snell.
Because how many seasons does the actual preseason Rookie of the Year favorite actually pull it off?
I remember, like, when I was really young, everyone saying Ben Grieve is going to be the Rookie of the Year, and then Ben Grieve was the goddamn Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, and then what the hell else did he do?
Regressed.
Get traded for Eric Hinsky, that's what. Why do I know that? I don't know.
It's pretty easy when the Dodgers just won Rookie of the Year every year.
I can't tell you who I went to school with as a child, but I can tell you that Ben Grieve was traded for friggin' Eric Hinsky.
NL West, I picked Dodgers winning it all and the Giants being second and winning the wild card.
Well, look at that. He wasn't even traded for Eric Hinsky. I'm just wrong.
Your memory is not no bueno.
Yeah, I guess I'm dying.
I like the Diamondbacks too much. I put them third.
Fool.
Padres fourth, Rockies fifth.
I think there's at least the soulless... Oh, man, Eric Hinsky was in the Billy Koch trade. That's right.
Which one?
The one between Oakland and Toronto.
Ah.
No, I think there's at least the solace that White Sox fans can take, as both pets are now attacking me. At least we're not the Diamondbacks, where they were supposed to compete this year and, like, be hard competitors. And instead, they're going to get a top five draft pick.
I think they might have flamed out hard enough that everyone gets fired, though. So,
oh, gotcha.
That's a credit to them.
Like, I don't see how you can keep Dave Stewart on. He doesn't even know how the rules work. They are an amazing experiment in just, like, catastrophe.
He's going to do something in the IFA market and, like, they all wind up in jail somehow.
Dave Stewart is, like, the 2010s version of Hawk as GM.
You know what? After what he did to the White Sox in the 93 ALCS, good.
It's just like, hey, here's this guy that used to play. He knows what's up. Put him in charge of the team. Hey, Zach Greinke, here's all of the money in the world. Hey, let's trade everything for Shelby Miller.
Part of me liked it because it was just aggressive, and I just kind of generally like it when teams are aggressive. But when the Shelby thing went down, it seemed to kind of like turned a little bit too far.
Yeah, well, I feel like the Shelby Miller trade was maybe the best example of everyone in baseball. It didn't matter if you're a numbers person. It didn't matter if you're like a gut scouts type person. It was just like, what? Like, it was maybe the universal worst trade in our lifetime.
Also, like, if you're like a traditional win-loss pitcher assessment type of guy, you probably freaked out as well.
Yeah, like, it didn't matter how you look at it, like, how you value players. There was no way to look at that and go, oh, yeah, Arizona did okay. It was instant, just like, what the hell did the Diamondbacks just do? Because it's really hard to think of a worse trade. I mean, the James Shields-Will Myers trade got panned, but there were people that were just like, yeah, there's rationale behind it. there was a point.
What direction are you citing it being panned from? Because I think a lot of people didn't like it for the Royals.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But there was at least, like, the idea that it was like, hey, this is the year we're actually going to push for it.
Right. And people just didn't think the trade's value wasn't awful. It was just, yeah. It seemed
like a dumb idea, but not, like, on this level of, hey, here's...
Everyone thought that the Royals weren't as good as this trade, this kind of short-term view trade,
yeah.
would make suggest that they were. But turns out they were.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas this one, it was just like, no, this is just bad.
I picked the Cubs to win the AL Central.
You picked the Cubs to win the AL Central?
That's NL Central.
I'm pretty sure you said AL.
I said NL.
Mm.
I had History Pirates approval. Second That's right. as the wild card, and the Cardinals third. And then I picked the Brewers to be the less crappy rebuilding team than the Reds. Picked the Mets to win the NL East with the Nationals second, not making the playoffs. So that was pretty wrong. Then Marlins, Phillies, Braves. I think I'm pretty good at this.
Yeah. You're okay.
I did pick Bryce Harper to win the NL MVP award.
Yeah, that was a rough fall off.
Really, I don't think any of my NL MVP guys are finishing in the top three since it's Posey and Goldschmidt.
Wow. You should stick to the better league.
Pick Kershaw to win Cy Young, followed by Scherzer and Thor. Not too bad.
Yeah.
Pick Mats to win Rookie of the Year, followed by Seager and Turner. Other than the fact that Seager's going to win, and maybe Turner finishes above Mats. I don't know. I think someone should pay me $100,000 a year to just do this.
No. No.
And I pick Cubs over Rangers in the World Series.
Well, you're a terrible person.
Why?
I don't know. It's fun to say.
You really shouldn't just upset people for fun, Mark.
Well,
maybe it works well with your patience. Not for people.
Well, shit, you've heard the parable of the scorpion and the frog.
They both die, right?
Yeah. That's not, like, the point, but yeah.
It's the end result.
It is the end result. But that's the end result in every story.
Some stories end before all the characters die.
Well, I think this is a good point to end the podcast.
Yeah, I was thinking that, too. Since we're just, like, kind of awkwardly exchanging rejoinders.
It's been a pleasure, James.
Forcing you to talk more is definitely a good strategic decision.
Yeah, this is brilliant. This is what the people wanted.
I know, I've got a lot of emails requesting this, so.
All right.
Okay, well, good night.